the extent of the human rights violations, the degree of the human rights violations, is just horrific.
A grim anniversary for Myanmar. It's Tuesday, February 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, discussing Ukraine. Uneven times for Malaysia tourism. Dr. Fauci tells us about vaccine donation. Lunar New Year incense. Electrifying your ride. It's all on today's VOA Asia. 1 year after the military coup in Myanmar, the army is clinging to power, and democratically elected leaders face lengthy prison sentences as the people continue to resist the seizure of power. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
Myanmar has been mired in chaos and violence since the military rejected the November 2020 election results and overthrew the civilian government on February 1st of last year. Rights groups say some 1,500 civilians, including dozens of children, have been killed and thousands more arrested in the military crackdown on protesters. It has not, however, lessened the people's resolve to demand a return to democracy.
I'm in awe of the people of Myanmar, and I'm certain that, or certain as I can be, that this has surprised Min Aung Hlaing and the military junta, who I think thought that they could get away with this, and they're finding that they just were not bargaining for the level of commitment of the people of Myanmar to saving their country.
The military has arrested, tried, and sentenced de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi, President Yoon Win Myint, and other high-ranking officials from the National League for Democracy Party. Military Chief General Min Aung Hlaing went to Indonesia in April for a summit of regional bloc ASEAN, where he agreed to implement a 5-point plan that included ending the violence and starting a national dialogue. It's a pledge he has not kept. At the UN Security Council, there has been a lack of action. Veto holders China and Russia do not want to see sanctions or an arms embargo on Myanmar's military. And a fear by other members of worsening existing council divisions has blocked meaningful action.
Frankly, what the Myanmar military has gotten from the Security Council is a green light. They know that they will get away with murder because countries aren't even going to try. They've given up.
With no council action, on June 18th, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution essentially urging an arms embargo. But their resolutions are not legally binding.
Well, I think that international institutions, including the UN and ASEAN, are stuck. And there is no obvious pathway for the Security Council or any other international body to put enough pressure on the military to reverse the coup.
Without an international arms embargo or targeted economic sanctions to pressure the generals, Myanmar's people have begun to fight back.
People are resisting to eliminate the military dictatorship by every possible means. Armed struggle is just one of the many ways to resist.
Violence has grown elsewhere across Myanmar between the military and ethnic armed groups, displacing hundreds of thousands of people.
The junta has declared war on the people of Myanmar, and they're identifying those who live in Myanmar in these villages as the enemy, and so therefore they feel that they have license to attack them, to kill them, to torture them. So the extent of the human rights violations, the degree of the human rights violations, is just horrific. And I'm afraid it's not getting better. It's getting worse.
Analysts say the prospect for quick resolution of the crisis is unlikely.
I think that for the time being, we sadly feel that we're going to see violence rumble on, and that even if it's contained, the chances of a political settlement are low.
Margaret Bashir, VOA News.
See our in-depth coverage of Myanmar on Facebook at VOA Asia. Visit us on Twitter and voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. North Korea claims longest-range missile test since 2017. United Nations says over 100 former Afghan international forces killed. A year after Myanmar's coup, families of detainees search for answers. Second Macau junket boss arrested as crackdown expands. Military to aid outback town cut off by Australian floods. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and more by visiting us at Facebook at VOA Asia. See us on Instagram and Twitter and voanews.com. We have much more on VOA Asia. Right now, the United Nations Security Council has met to discuss Russia's buildup of more than 100,000 troops along Ukraine's border. Western and Ukrainian officials continue to be on alert for a possible invasion. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
52-year-old Mariana Zaglo is a mother of three. She works in marketing and lives in Ukraine's capital, Kyiv. Zaglo is also a territorial defense reservist willing to fight for her country should Russian soldiers amassed on the border invade.
I'm a soldier now, and of course I must follow orders. Whatever the order is, I will follow it. I will not kill people, but I will protect my home.
According to the Reuters news agency, Kyiv wants to build this reservist force to 130,000 people. Meanwhile, the United States continues sending weapons and ammunition to Ukraine following President Joe Biden's announcement of a small troop deployment to Eastern Europe. The U.S. plans to confront Russia over its actions along Ukraine's border at a meeting of the United Nations Security Council.
The Security Council is unified. Our voices are unified in calling for the Russians to explain themselves. We're going to go in the room prepared to listen to them, but we're not going to be distracted by their propaganda, and we're going to be prepared to respond to any disinformation that they attempt to spread during this meeting.
Ambassador Thomas Greenfield added that a Russian attack on Ukraine is possible, saying, quote, "You don't amass 100,000 troops if you don't have intentions to use them." At a recent news conference in Moscow, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said the Kremlin wants mutually respectful relations with the U.S., but added what he called NATO's encroachment farther east as cause for Russian concern. In Washington, Ukraine's border has become a rare moment of political unity amid growing calls to bolster the former Soviet republic.
America always stands for freedom. You know, we are the country that believes that people's free will ought to be respected, that sovereignty matters, that the dignity of the Ukrainian people matters, and this is what they want. So their territorial integrity is at risk right now, and it is appropriate that the free world stand by them.
Meanwhile, arms continue flowing to Ukraine like British-supplied anti-tank missiles.
We do not want to be part of the Soviet Union or the Russian Empire or the Russian Federation. We want to be sovereign, we are sovereign, and we are fighting for our independence. And if Ukraine will be further attacked by Russia, of course they will not stop after Ukraine. So that's why it's in the interest of Europe and all democratic world to help us to defend ourselves, but also to show that the international rule of law still works.
NATO countries continue sending material support while the NATO chief has ruled out sending troops into Ukraine in case of an invasion. The West has ruled out Russia's demand that NATO promise never to allow Ukraine to join the alliance. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, the triumphs and struggles of Malaysia tourism. Happening now in Asia, muted celebrations were held in parts of Asia as the region marked the Lunar New Year holiday for the third year in a row with rising coronavirus cases, again limiting public celebrations. 2022 marks the year of the tiger. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to share this time with you on VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. Travel restrictions due to the pandemic have put immense pressure on the tourism industry around the globe. In the southeastern nation of Malaysia, it is a tale of two stories. Businesses that have found ways to pivot and succeed, but many more that still struggle. Dave Grunebaum has our report.
At the W Kuala Lumpur Hotel, high tea sets are prepared for delivery to customers celebrating the Chinese New Year. Tasty meats such as rolled smoked duck and tiger prawn sliders are being offered, as well as fresh baked treats like red date cheesecake and chocolate tarts. This five-star hotel now offers home delivery.
Delivery was something new, and we haven't considered that really prior to the pandemic.
Because of travel restrictions due to the pandemic, the hotel targeted potential clients living in Malaysia. Hotel managers say business is down 25% in recent months compared to pre-pandemic times, but they add the hotel has still been able to make a profit, drawing guests for local getaways and delivering food.
Just to stay in the game, we had to actually as well to connect and open our channels and open our mind to other channels to sell our products and sell our experience.
Prior to the pandemic, tourism was more than 15% of Malaysia's GDP. But much of that business has been wiped away in the last 2 years. The W success story is a rare one, according to Malaysia's Hotel Association.
You need to be creative. You need to set yourself apart from the pack. And first, your competition is with the standalone restaurants outside. And second, you have to compete with the same great hotels within that area.
Langkawi is a popular vacation destination in northern Malaysia. Ali Khalid and his wife run a cafe here called the Red Tomato. It's a well-known gathering spot for foreign travelers who come for fresh baked bread, eggs benedict, and warm hospitality.
They come as strangers, travelers, and they leave as friends.
Despite a recent uptick of Malaysian customers, Khalid says business is still half of pre-pandemic levels. In November, the government started a tourist bubble to draw vaccinated foreigners to Langkawi. But local stores and restaurants say it has not made much difference.
Yeah, we do have sleepless nights and thinking what they're supposed to do, what is going to happen.
The Malaysian government is considering additional steps to bring more foreign tourists into the country. The return of international visitors would bring a needed boost to both small and large businesses that rely on tourists to stay afloat. For VOA News, Dave Grunebaum, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
As Malaysia tourism continues to cope with the pandemic, the United States is sending vaccine around the world. Dr. Anthony Fauci joins us with more on that in a moment.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, Manila Mayor and presidential candidate Francisco de Magoso said if he wins this year's election, he will not hesitate to press Beijing to follow international law regarding maritime issues. China claims vast sections of the South China Sea. Brunei, Malaysia, Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam have overlapping claims. This is VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. On yesterday's program, Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and the chief medical advisor to the president, described the current COVID situation here in the United States. Today, he tells us about efforts to help the rest of the world, beginning with the main vaccine manufacturers.
We can get doses that are manufactured in the plants that are already going full blast to the low and middle income countries. I mean, obviously, several of the companies, even Moderna, have said that they would not create or any issue with patent involvement if other countries are able to essentially produce the vaccine. So I don't think that that is an issue. I mean, obviously, you want to make sure that you have everything you do to make doses available for the developing world. But I think we can do that on the basis of what's going on right now.
Now in the U.S., it's considered normal to have three shots, a booster. And do you think that the U.S. needs to change its vaccine donation efforts in light of that? The three shots is now considered to be the norm, especially with the highly contagious Omicron variant.
No, I think the donation effort is really substantial and will get better and better. And I think ultimately that will accommodate the need for boosters. But let's take one step at a time. A very small percentage of some of the countries, particularly in Southern Africa, are fully vaccinated. Let's get that first, and then we'll worry about the boosters. But we do appreciate the need ultimately throughout the world to get people optimally protected. And we know that optimal protection with an mRNA means a third shot, and with J&J means a second shot.
I want to ask you about the lessons that you think we should have learned from the AIDS pandemic that we haven't learned, that we should be applying to the COVID pandemic.
Well, I think there's been a lot of back and forth between COVID and HIV, things that we've learned from HIV to apply to COVID, and things that we've learned with COVID that will go back and help us with HIV, the latter of which is the vaccine capability that was developed with new platforms and immunogen design that have led to such successful vaccines with COVID-19. We're going to go back now and apply some of those technologies to HIV, which, as you know, we've not been successful in developing vaccines for HIV. So that's going from COVID to HIV. From HIV to COVID, I think it's important to make sure you engage the community, particularly with regard to the disparities in health. One of the things that have been really problematic in our own country is that African Americans and Hispanics have a higher degree of likelihood of getting infected. When they do get infected, they have a higher likelihood of a severe outcome. And that is because of some of the underlying comorbidities that are much more prevalent in the African American and Hispanic population, such as diabetes, obesity, hypertension, kidney disease, chronic lung disease. So the lessons we've learned from both HIV, in which there have clearly been health disparities, and COVID-19, is that maybe we should use this to remind us why we have a responsibility to address the social determinants of health that allow a Black and brown person to be much more likely to get a severe outcome from an infection that should essentially impact people equally, and it doesn't. And that has to do with a very complicated issue of social determinants of health that go back decades, if not centuries, in this country, dating back to the inherent racism that we see in so many elements of our society.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, who shared the latest on COVID in a conversation with VOA. Making headlines in Asia, Jimin of popular Korean pop band BTS is currently recovering in a hospital after surgery for acute appendicitis after he tested positive for coronavirus upon entry into the hospital for the operation. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Lunar New Year incense and fans of the Olympics are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascajo.
Vietnam's incense village is dazzling pink as workers prepare the fragrant sticks for the Lunar New Year holiday. But strict rules to stop the spread of COVID-19 are dulling its luster. January is usually the busiest time of the year for workers in Quang Phu Cao Village on the outskirts of Hanoi, where the tradition of making incense goes back more than a century. As Vietnam's Tet New Year holiday approaches, this year it begins on February 1st, sales tick up with throngs of people crowding into temples to light incense during worship or burn the sticks on the ancestral altar at home. But while villagers are busy dyeing, drying, and whittling bamboo bark to make the sticks, they complain that business is slow. Incense stick maker Nguyen Thi Luen.
Our products have moved slower before Lunar New Year this year because of COVID. Our sales must have dropped by 30% compared to the same period last year.
Production, supply chain, and businesses were seriously hit as almost the entire country went into lockdown for at least 3 months. Things have started to improve, but the consequences remain. Communist Vietnam reported economic growth for 2021 of just 2.58%, its lowest in three decades. as the country endured draconian restrictions to fight the pandemic. Crammed on every available surface in Zhang Wenquan's crowded Beijing home is Olympic memorabilia, from mascots and torches to flags, banners, clothes, and cuddly toys. The Chinese superfan scours the internet for rare souvenirs and snaps selfies several times a week by the countdown clock to the 2022 Winter Games in the capital. Beijing will become the first city to host both the Summer and Winter Olympics when the event kicks off in February, a dream come true for the construction firm worker. Zhang's interest was first piqued when he became glued to the 2000 Sydney Olympics as a high school student. Olympics fan and souvenir collector Zhang Wenquan.
I started collecting Olympic souvenirs from the 2000 Sydney Olympics. Since then, I've collected about 5,000 items from Summer Olympics, Winter Olympics, Youth Olympics, and some from the Asian Games.
The house is so full of piles of boxes that he has been forced to sleep elsewhere. He estimates spending at least 400,000 yuan on 5,000 souvenirs so far. That's about $62,800. Zhang scours eBay daily for new listings, with the most expensive find being a $1,900 torch from the 2002 Salt Lake City Winter Olympics. He has row upon row of the mascot Bing Duan Duan for the coming Winter Games, a panda wearing a shell made of ice, in various colors and sizes. He also receives donations of merchandise from Olympic volunteers. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
Electric vehicles are in high demand as gas prices and concerns about carbon emissions and global warming climb. From the 2022 Washington, D.C. Auto Show, VOA Saqib al-Islam examines where consumers and car manufacturers think all electric vehicles are heading in the future.
Exotic and luxury cars show off their futuristic features, but the main attraction at the 2022 Washington Auto Show is the EV Pavilion, where the new battery-powered vehicles have been stealing the show.
So one of the reasons I came here for this auto show is to find out what the automobile makers individually and collectively are planning for the future of the electric car or hybrids on the way.
Electric vehicle sales increased by 41% globally in 2020. Major automobile manufacturers like Toyota and Ford are now working to produce more electric models, which are not only fuel efficient, but also climate friendly.
There certainly is a higher demand in recent years for these types of alternative fuel vehicles than there have been in the past. It seems as if consumers are really wanting to lower their carbon footprint.
Looking to upgrade his car, Mark Spencer drove 3 hours with his son and father to check out the electric vehicles. He's looking for one with better mileage and price, but he has other concerns too.
They need to get the price down so everyone can afford it, and they said they really need the infrastructure to support them. You just can't afford to wait at a gas station for 30 minutes for a charge.
The Washington Auto Show is back after 1 year's gap, and this year's highlight is electric vehicles and the infrastructure around it. The EV Pavilion at the Auto Show is sponsored by Electrify America, a Washington-based fast charging station network that extends across the United States. With the theme, "The Future is Electric," Electrify America's aim is to make it easy for consumers to adopt electric vehicles.
Tesla has been selling electric vehicles for a long time. The problem with that is they're largely for wealthy people. So if you can take Tesla out of the equation and put in somebody like a Nissan or a General Motors or a Toyota or a Hyundai that does have mass market capability, you can have the nation adopt it quicker at a more affordable rate.
O'Donnell says American consumers are now more open-minded about adopting electric vehicles since the government is providing tax credits and more incentives are coming in President Biden's Build Back Better plan. Saqib al-Islam, VOA News, Washington.
That's all the time we have for today's program. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online. We're there 24 hours a day, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Look us up. Thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. be well.